You ever hear about the first time Captain Stormbless drew in light? I was there. Second row. Bridge run. Bad one. We were charging the plateau, and a lot of Parshendi had set up. They dropped most of the first row. All but Kaladin. That exposed me. Right beside him, second row. In those days, you didn't have good odds running near the front. The Parshendi wanted to take down our bridge, and they focused their shots on us. On me. I knew I was dead. I knew it. I saw the arrows coming, and I breathed a last prayer, hoping the next life wouldn't be quite so bad. Then the arrows moved, Lynn. They stormin' swerved towards Kaladin.
Heroes of presents The Storm Pod, a Stormlight Archive podcast. Book 3, Oathbringer.
This is just a quick spoiler warning for chapters 46 and 47 of Oathbringer. If you haven't caught up on your reading or you picked the wrong episode, make sure that you go back and do the things you're supposed to do to be in the mode to be listening to this episode. Welcome back after a week off. Thank you very much for being patient with us. We really hope that you enjoyed the long weekend if you had one, and we really hope that you'll enjoy the episode. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sean Q, and he tried to join the Black Caps, but now he's stuck doing podcasts with me. It's Jack. What's up, man?
Hey, how are you? You know, the Black Caps.
It sounds pretty cool, right?
Yeah, it sounds really cool.
Yeah, I kind of want more information about them.
Well, the first thing I thought of when I read it was Craftmaster Mike's Black Minox group.
Right. The Star Wars, yeah.
Your Star Wars group.
An elite stormtrooper group, yeah. Called the Black Minoxes and Craftmaster Mike's Star Wars RPG that he does.
That's right.
But yeah, the Black Caps does sound kind of like that. You're right.
It did. So that was my first thought when I was reading it this morning.
Yeah.
Which I did. This is a very fresh read for me. So
yeah,
you just
finished reading it there. Yeah. They're like Aladar's like elite group of like soldiers or whatever. They're almost like the Cobalt Guard.
Aladar, yeah.
Like the Cobalt Guard are the Colan family's like kind of royal guard or whatever, like special protectors. So Black Caps probably are the same for Aladar, maybe.
Yeah.
Not as cool of a name.
It's the Pink Berets.
Like, if you add an R in there, they're just the Black Craps, which no one ever wants to have a Black Crap, because then you should go see an Ardent.
You should go see your doctor.
Yeah, go see a physician, yeah, for sure.
This chapter, so chapter 46 today, When the Dream Dies.
Yeah, what a great chapter, eh?
It's cool. I really like it. I loved having all the characters there. I was wondering as I was reading it whether Scar's like taking in Stormlight was already happening.
And he just didn't realize it was happening?
Right. So I was kind of wondering if he was unique that way. So when it was kind of going through it and he was, you know, helping other people realize their potential, their power.
Right. That's not the first time that we've heard this. We heard this in the previous chapter that Scar seemed to be able to help people attain it. Right.
So I was thinking, okay, well, that's maybe that is how he's infusing. It's like it's going through him to someone else.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
But not really lingering to give him a glow or something. But it's just it's a conduit or something. So I thought that might make him unique. But then, of course, at the end of this chapter, he does glow.
Yeah.
And Rock is like, I love the way that plays out, by the way, in the dialogue. It's great.
It is really great. Yeah.
Okay, so let's get into this one. Did you expect anything else from us? We need not suffer the interference of another. Raze is contained, and we care not for his prison.
Mm-hmm.
So my first thought there is his prison an individual?
Okay.
Like, is Ray's contained within someone? You know how like a spren kind of inhabits or bonds with you, or
And how Fabrials have a trapped spren inside their gem, and that's how it makes it work. Is this what you're thinking of? Like that maybe Ray's is also trapped inside something?
Or just what we know of as Ray's is, you know, inhabiting a body. Like I don't know. I just thought of in terms of this in terms of this language when it says Ray's is contained and we care not for his prison. To care not for his prison, like what? Like you and I don't care if he's in Alcatraz.
Right. Like, funny enough, there is a book series by Brandon Sanderson that is the Alcatraz series.
Is it?
Yeah, he actually wrote a young adult books about Alcatraz. So,
oh my gosh, yeah. He must have been inspired by The Rock. Well, that's where we get The Rock from.
I don't know if it's the same Alcatraz, but anyways, sidebar.
Okay,
yeah,
we
don't even really know at this point in the book who or what Ray's is. We know it's a person, but we don't even really know. We don't even what a raise is. Like, we don't even really know.
Well, this is my point was because so we've met raise. Okay,
we have not met raise.
Oh, who am I thinking of?
You're talking about
Ghost
Moraes.
Oh, Moraes.
This is a different dude altogether.
Or I'm confusing
not dude,
this.
But a different thing altogether.
Gotcha. Well, okay, so. So I got those two characters crossed. So
they have been
bad.
Talking in these epigraphs. They have been talking about these shards with a capital S.
Yes.
So whether or not Ray's is one of those, or if this is just another subject that this letter is now going on altogether, like if the writer has now changed subject, it'll be a little more clear, I think, at the end of the book whenever we link up with Buzzkill Joe and you get to read the entire letter like as it develops, right?
That
because it's harder to piece things together, you know,
sure,
every couple of sentences or whatever and have it relevant. So
well, the other thought I just had now, which is Ray's contained within someone? Sure. Is the prison a person, like a vessel? Mm-hmm. You know, what if it's Roshar? What if Ray's is imprisoned here?
Like on the planet or like in this, like,
what if that's the prison, you know, like in terms of like the Cosmere, this idea, this, you know, what if that's
that's interesting.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
That was my thought whenever it said, we care not for the prison. Those were my thoughts.
Meaning like the people that are talking, the we do not care about Roshar. Do not care about this.
Yeah, and we don't care of the consequences that might result from putting Ray's there in that prison. Whatever that prison is, whether it's a person or whether it's a place or whether it's a planet. It's like we care not for the prison with which currently contains Ray's.
Right.
And it sort of seemed to imply that containing Ray's could be a problem for the people that are in and around his or her imprisonment.
In
or their
chapter
imprisonment.
41 epigraph, it says, regardless, this is not your concern. You turned your back on divinity. If Ray's becomes an issue, he will be dealt with, and so will you. So
Ray's becomes an issue, he will be dealt with.
Will be dealt with. So Ray's is like a person, or at the very least a male entity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I think that we could say with accuracy that Syl is a female entity and that Pattern is a male spren, like reflecting those immortal representations of gender, I guess, in that way. I don't know necessarily if gender really matters to spren. That's not something that we've actually seen.
We don't really know
anything about the Shadesmar, that kind of society stuff. So.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But yeah. So yeah. Ray's something to think about.
Something to think. It got me thinking.
Yeah.
Anyways,
for sure.
Okay. So getting into the meat, if you will, of chapter 46, when the dream dies, Scar the Bridgeman runs up one of the ramps outside Urithiru, breath puffing in the cold air. The air was thinner up here in Urithiru, and that made running harder. He wore full marching pack and gear, rations, equipment, helmet, jerkin, and a shield tied on the back, or tied to the back. I'm just going to say again, he carried his spear. I love descriptions of what characters have on them. I always have loved it, because I love going one piece at a time, imagining it on the person.
Yeah, it's great.
It's just a thing.
Definitely creates a nice visual.
That I love. Okay. All of that weighed almost as much as he did. That's funny. Have you ever, so this got me to thinking with regards to, you know, equipment that, military have to train with. And it's, so it's harsh.
Yeah.
Like, it's severe.
For sure. They have to be able to, what would be the point of training without any of it? Because you're going to need that stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
Sure, you could be faster without any of that stuff, but you're not going to be, you're going to need all that stuff if you are in battle.
It's just, I like the subtle point here, if you will, that, you know, he's got all this gear on. He's still carrying a heavy load, a weight, a bridge, right? Still a bridgeman. He finally hits the top of the Oathgate platform. But the center building looked farther away than he remembered. He tried to pick up his pace and jogged for all that he was worth, the path, his pack clinking. Finally, sweating, breath growing ragged, he reached the control building and dashed inside. Most of Bridge 4 was waiting here, and some were glowing with stormlight. Scar was the only one who, despite 2 weeks of practice, still hadn't figured out how to draw it in. Well, except for Dabid and Relaine.
And so he's thinking, like, I'm the only regular Bridgeman who haven't.
Right.
Because Relaine's a Parshendi, and so can Parshendi even do this? Or, or he's a listener, so can the listeners even do this? And Dabid, we know, is the one who is kind of slow, and he's the one who had a major head injury at the very beginning of the series. He's there, he's part of them, they love him, but he's not, he doesn't have full capabilities as some of these other men have, right?
Right.
So in Scar's mind, it makes sense that the two of them wouldn't be able to do it. But why the fuck am I not able to do it?
Yeah, why can't I? I can guide people along, but I can't. And wasn't Scar one of the first Bridgemen who showed great promise in the training?
Yes, but he was also one of the first ones that hated what Kaladin was doing along with Moash. Moash were the more vocal descenders at the very beginning. And then when they started realizing what he could do, they were also the ones that bought in quickest too. And like bought in most wholeheartedly.
Right.
And also Kaladin would say many times in A Way of Kings that his two best fighters with the spears is Moash and Scar. They took to it really, really quickly.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that has something to do with the delayed sort of, I guess, retention of stormlight or absorption.
Like maybe he's like the strongest denier, just like he was at the beginning of.
He was a bit like Moash. He wasn't fully ready to embrace this.
Yeah. I see it. Like, I see it. There's a through line there.
Maybe that could be I don't know.
Yeah.
Sigzil checked the clock that they'd been allocated by Navani Kolin, a device the size of a small box. That was about 10 minutes, Sigzil says, just under. Well, how long did it take Drahi? It was under 6 minutes. Scar groans. The baseline is equally important, Scar, Sigzil says. We need to know a normal man's abilities to make comparisons. Don't worry, though. I'm sure you'll figure out Stormlight soon. Scar flopped backward, looking up. Lopin was walking around on the ceiling of the room, storming her daisy. So he's dancing on. So he's Lionel Richie up there.
Yeah.
Drahi, you used a quarter of the basic lashing by Kaladin's terminology, Sigzil continues. Yeah, Drahi says. I know the precise amount. Sig, strange. Which made you half as heavy as usual when we put you on the scale back in the rooms, but why does a quarter lashing make you half as heavy? Shouldn't it make you 25% as heavy?
That's interesting, right?
What do you make of that?
I don't think that it's hard to quantify this.
When we put you on the scale, why does a quarter lashing make you half as heavy?
Shouldn't it make you only 25% as heavy?
Yeah.
It doesn't correlate. Those two things don't matter. You know what I mean? It
doesn't correlate. No. Yeah. Does it matter? Asks Strahey. And Sigzil looks up at him as if he were crazy. Of course it does. This is the thing that I used to fear. Remember when we were first reading this, where Sigzil was wanting to document everything and I was suspicious and still am suspicious. Yeah. So I was thinking, well, this is a problem. He wants to know too much kind of thing. But I think it's just he's inquisitive.
He wants to quantify everything, he wants to write it all down.
Right.
He wants to write it all down and make sure that everyone knows about it. If they can figure out the rules of everything, then it might be easier to teach others how to do it.
Right, of course.
He's writing a manual, a how-to. Stormlight for Dummies is what literally he's writing right now.
I love that. That's great. The Cole's Notes of
Stormlight. Yeah.
Of Becoming Radiant.
Yeah.
That's funny. I used to think it was suspicious. Now I love it because he looks up at Dre as if he's crazy. Like, what do you mean? Does it matter? Like, are you out of your mind?
Yeah. it literally only took you two books to get here. Thank God.
I'll get there with Navani as well. I'll get there.
Yeah. Let's hope. Let's hope it's not like book six. You're like, I finally trust her.
It's at the end of the series, book 10. I'm ready to go.
And that's when Sanderson does a heel turn and she's the big bad.
Oh, no.
She's like, my name is Raze.
I don't think she will.
She takes a mask off. I'm Raze. Yeah.
Ta-da.
Yeah.
I'm witty. I'm wit's evil brother.
In the old Dawn chant, Navani means odium.
Yeah, exactly. In the old Dawn chant. Of course it does. I want to try a lashing at an angle next, says Drahi. See if I can make it feel like I'm running downhill no matter which direction that I'm going. Might not need it. Holding Stormlight, it made me feel like I could run forever. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a new record, Sigzil mumbles. You beat Lopin's time. Did he beat mine? Leighton asks, calling from the side of the small room where he was inspecting the tiling. You stopped for food on the way, Leighton, Sigzil says. Even Rock beat your time, and he was skipping like a girl in the last third. That's funny. Was horny the dance of victory, Rock says near Leighton. Is very manly. Well, manly or not, it threw off my test, Sigzil says. At least Scar is willing to pay attention to proper procedure.
Right.
Scar remained lying on the ground as the others chatted, and Kaladin was supposed to come and transport them to the Shattered Plains, but he was late, as usual.
Okay, how hilarious is this, that...
Oh, this bit?
That Leighton is like, yo, did he beat my time?
Did he beat my time?
Dude, you stopped for food. You took a break and went and got something to eat.
Yeah, like, you got a big gulp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just can't not go into a Sevies, can you?
Yeah, you can't resist. Tef sits down next to Scar, inspecting him with dark green eyes, with bags underneath. Kaladin had named the two of them lieutenants, along with Rock and Sigzil, but Tef was the perfect definition of a platoon sergeant, despite these new roles.
Right.
And I like imagining Tef that way. Here, Tef says, handing over a chuta, which were meatballs wrapped in flatbread, Herdazian style. Leighton brought food. Eat something, lad. Scar forced himself to sit up and says, I'm not much younger than you, Tef. I'm hardly a lad. Tef nods at himself, chewing on his own chuta. Finally, Scar started into his, and it was good. Not spicy like a lot of the Alethi food, but still good. Flavorful. And I also love when they get into the food.
Yeah.
It's great.
Well,
I love.
They all were like, that's gross, bro, at the beginning when they first, in Words of Radiance, when someone first ate it. And now they're all, now it's like their troops' like signature food.
Mm-hmm.
They're like going to battle, spear in one hand, shuta in the other. Like, let's go.
Yeah, it's a Subway meatball sandwich, is what it is. It's a
$5 foot shuta.
That's it. Everyone keeps telling me that I'll get it soon, Scar says, but what if I don't? There won't be room in the Windrunners for a lieutenant who has to walk everywhere. I'll end up cooking lunch with Rock. Ain't nothing wrong with being on the support team. Or no, that's probably a signal.
That's probably Teft saying
or
that
no, too. That's probably Teft. Mm-hmm. Pardon, Sarge, but storm that. Do you know how long I waited to hold a spear? I'm good at it. I can fight, only... Lopin left the ceiling, floating down gently to the floor. He laughed as Bizzig, in turn, tried to fly up to the ceiling and crashed headfirst into it. Bizzig hopped to his feet, embarrassed, but what did he have to be embarrassed about? He was standing on the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
I love that bit.
That's awesome.
I really do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Bizzig smashes up into the ceiling. It's kind of comical, and it's like, oh, well, I'm embarrassed because I didn't do it. It's like, well, think of where you've come.
Yeah. Look at me sitting down here eating a sandwich. I can't even do that.
Yeah, I know. That was just one of my small highlights of this chapter.
Mm-hmm.
You were in the military before, Teft guessed. No, but not for lack of trying. You've heard of the Black Caps? Aladar's personal guards, Teft says. Let's just say that they didn't think much of my application. And then inside, I think he's thinking, yes, we let Dark Eyes in, but not Runts.
Mm-hmm.
So this was something I don't think I was clear on. That Scar was the Runt. I don't know how clear I was that Scar was... Now, when they say Runt, does it just mean that Scar is shorter
undersized?
Than...
Yeah.
Shorter than some, I guess?
Runt typically is like the small of the litter, is like the kind of what the right. description is. I think that this might sound exactly like what he was told when he tried to apply to the Black Caps. We let Dark Eyes in, but not Runts, meaning like you're just not, you just don't
apply.
Have it. And it might not be about his size. It just might be about like, you just don't have it. You're not in.
Mm-hmm. Said they might reconsider if I equipped myself, Scar says. Do you know how much armor costs? I was a stupid rock splitter with visions of battlefield glory. It used to be they'd never speak about their pasts, but that had changed. Though Scar couldn't specify exactly when it came out as part of the catharsis of having become something greater. I love this too.
Me too.
I love that in the novels, mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, they never used to speak about their past, but then as you keep reading, something has changed.
We take for granted, really, how far these men have come. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Sitting around laughing at each other, joking. Like, you know, this group of men is unrecognizable from when we first met them.
It must be a real trip to, because I haven't done it yet, mm-hmm. to go back to Way of Kings.
It is excellent. It's so
It must
awesome.
Be a real trip because mm-hmm. it's like, oh yeah, like reminding yourself where they began.
Yeah, it's just a bunch of wretches living
right.
at the, you know, on the shattered plains.
Yeah, dying under horrible
all
conditions.
Not caring about anything, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's crazy. I look forward to being able to do that. So Teft was an addict. Drahi had struck an officer. Okay, so we get a little more info here.
Yeah.
Eth had been caught planning to desert with his brother. Even Hobber had been part of a drunken brawl, a man that ended up dead. So this, it's funny. So Hobber for me now is Nicolas Cage because he, you know, it was part of a drunken brawl. Somebody ended up dead. It's not like he wanted this.
No.
So it reminded me of Con Air.
Right.
Because the character in Con Air basically does the same thing, gets caught up in a brawl and goes
some guy,
to
some
goes
guy
to jail.
Ends up dead, yeah.
Yeah. So Teft says, you'd think that our high and mighty leader would have gotten here by now. I swear, Kaladin acts more like a light eyes every day. Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
A little bite from Teft there. Do you think it's foreshadowing?
Yeah, I don't know. It seems...
Because I've been worried about Dalinar for so long. Like, I wonder if it's Kaladin that I need to be
Teft
worried about.
Teft seems resentful a little bit, right?
I know. It's a bite.
I think I know why. And there's no secret. I think we can parse out from all the information we have right now, we know why Teft is like this towards Kaladin. Because Kaladin keeps expecting more of Teft, and Teft does not want to be more. He wants to be passed out in a ditch somewhere, recovering from the night before, and then going to the drug den again and getting high again. Kaladin is that light. Get the fucking light away from me. Right?
Yeah, I think Teft basically wants Kaladin to wake up.
To leave him the fuck alone.
See me for what I am.
Yes.
How are you seeing me in this different way? Wake up.
Stop expecting more from me.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's why he's got a little bit of bite to his words when he's talking about Kaladin. Oh, right, he's all high and mighty. Our high and mighty Kaladin.
Well, he's Kaladin is kind of what stands between him and the drugs and the moss.
That's exactly it. Yeah,
that's exactly it. Kaladin is in the way.
Not necessarily physically, but like his expectations of...
Sure. All of that's Kaladin. All what Kaladin has constructed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Teft's life is dealing with that, which comes before acquiring moss.
Right, right.
Right. Yeah, yeah. That's it. Don't let him hear you say that, says Scar. I'll say what I want, Teft snaps. If that boy's not going to come, maybe I should be going. I have things to do.
See? Well, if he's going to be late like this, then I'm just going to go then. I have drugs to go.
Yeah, I'm just going to go.
Yeah.
And Scar gives him a glance, and then Teft growls and says, no, not that. I've barely touched the stuff in days. You'd think a man had never had a wild night out, the way you're all treating me. I didn't say a thing, Teft.
Lies.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
If Pattern were here, Pattern would be saying lies.
Hmm. Oh, and the warning from Ivory in the next chapter about the cryptics?
I can't even believe, actually, that we did this intro earlier and didn't even mention that second chapter. Second chapter is fucking bonkers, bro. It's awesome.
Yeah,
I can't wait to get to it.
We'll get there. Knowing what we've suffered, it's insane to think that we wouldn't need something to get us through the day. The moss isn't the problem. It's the storming world going all crazy. That's the problem. Sure is, Teft. Scar seems to agree with this, but I don't know if he wholeheartedly agrees.
I think he's placating him a little bit.
Teft eyed him and then studied his chuta. So how long have the men known? I mean, did anyone... Not long, Scar says quickly. Nobody's even thinking about it. Teft nodded and didn't see through the lie.
Right.
This is another one of my highlights.
Yeah.
Is that Scar is protecting.
He's downplaying
it. Or guiding.
A little bit. Yeah.
He's guiding. I like the guidance sort of thing with Scar. Mm-hmm. Is like he's.
Me too.
He's encouraging people to be able to absorb a Stormlight. And he knows what Teft needs here. Teft doesn't need to know that the men are.
Are talking about
concerned
his drug
or rolling
addiction
their eyes
and,
about
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he doesn't need to know. That'll make things worse. He'll feel more shame and then he'll go right back to the drug again.
Right.
Yeah.
So he's protecting him.
Mm-hmm.
The truth was, most of them had noticed that Teft was sneaking off to grind a little moss now and then. But doing what he'd done, missing duty, selling his uniform and ending up in the alley, that was different.
Mm-hmm.
That could get you discharged and at worst, assigned to bridge duty.
Mm-hmm.
So there we have it, another reminder about
how he got there.
I mean, we knew from the previous chapter, but it's just so interesting that you make a mistake, and in this world, you pay a severe price for it.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. But what this also teaches, what I love about this book is that, you know, despite all of these crimes, if you will, the rehabilitation is so illuminating as to like the loss of, I guess, human potential by putting them in incarcerations or in conditions of where they might die. I think that's what this story is in part sort of it's a commentary, I think, about the penal system.
Yeah, there's bits of that, I think, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It also begs to say that, you know, we're all broken.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly. And, you know, locking somebody up in perpetuity, I mean, what's that going to accomplish, really? Mm-hmm. And look what Kaladin's done with these, you know, with these criminals.
Yeah.
Yeah. Missing duty, selling uniform, got you assigned to bridge duty. Trouble was, they weren't common soldiers anymore. They weren't light eyes either. They were something strange, something that nobody understood. And Something Strange was my alternate title for this chapter. I don't want to talk about this, Teft says. Look, weren't we discussing how to get you to glow? Isn't that the real problem at hand? So a deflection here from,
yeah,
from Teft.
Bit. Yeah.
Doesn't, yeah. That, which is understandable. Before he could press any further, Kaladin Stormblessed finally deigned to arrive. So we get some more deigning.
Yeah. Yeah, deign.
He deigned.
Yeah.
Do I deign? Yes, I do, sir. I deign. Again and again, bringing him with him the scouts and hopefuls from the other bridge crews. Nobody except from Bridge 4 had been managed to absorb Stormlight. But that included a few that had never actually run bridges. Huio and Punio, Lopin's cousins, and men like Cohen from the old Cobalt Guard, mm-hmm. who had been recruited into Bridge 4 a couple of months back.
Mm-hmm.
So there was still hope that others could manage it. Kaladin had brought near roughly 30 people beyond those who had already been training with the team. Judging by their uniform patches, this 30 had come from other divisions, and some were even light-eyed. Kaladin had mentioned asking General Call to round up the most promising recruits throughout the Alethi army.
Mm-hmm.
All here, Kaladin asks. Good. He strode to the side of the single-roomed control building, a sack of glowing gemstones slung over his shoulder. His magnificent shard blade appeared in his hand, and he slid it into the keyhole in the chamber wall. So he was engaging with this ancient mechanism, pushing the sword toward a specific point marked by the murals, and the floor began to glow. And when the glow faded, they'd come to Narok.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool, this device.
Yeah, very cool.
Scar left his pack armor leaning against the wall and strode out. As the at the platform edge, there was a group of people climbing across a ramp to meet them. A short Alethi woman named Bristina counted out the bridgemen and soldiers as they passed, marking them on a ledger. "Took you long enough, Bright Lord," she noted to Kaladin. Eyes glowed faintly blue. The merchants were beginning to complain. It took Stormlight to power the device. Some of the gemstones in Kaladin's sack would have been drained by the process. But curiously, it didn't take much more to swap two groups than it did to travel one way. So they tried to run oath gates when they had people on both sides wanting to exchange places. So this was just...
So do you understand how what happened here?
What's that?
So you understand what happened?
Yeah,
so there's
I think
two plateaus, one at Narok, one at Shattered Plains. When
that's
Kaladin
right.
activated the one at the Shattered Plains, the people went whoosh, and they swapped places.
That's right.
So all the merchants were waiting on the plateau over at Narok, and now they're over. That's really cool.
Yeah,
I like
it
that
is.
It's not a one-way trip. And then if Kaladin wanted to bring those merchants back, he would have had to go back again. I like that they
that's
waited
right.
until the other side got activated, and then they swapped places.
And Kaladin gives them a little bit of like, well, if you'd like to become radiant and speak the oaths, then you can maybe facilitate more traveling.
Right, because there's not a few. There's only a few of them, right?
That's right. Christine, so Kaladin says, tell the merchants when they come through, Kaladin says, that the Knights Radiant are not their doormen. They'll want to accustom themselves to waiting, unless they find a way to swear the oaths themselves.
Right.
Ristina smirked and wrote that down, and Scar smiled at that because it was nice to see a scribe with a sense of humor.
Like she was going to actually say that to them.
Yeah.
I like that a lot, too.
Kaladin led the way through the city of Narok, which was once a Perendi stronghold, now increasingly more important human way stop between the war camps and Ur-Thiru. The buildings were sturdy, constructed of Krem and carved with great shell carapace. Scar had always assumed that the Parshendi were like nomads, roving between Azir and Yakaved. He imagined the Parshendi as wild, ferocious, without civilization, hiding in caves. And yet here was a well-built, carefully laid-out city. They'd found the building full of artwork. They'd been painting even while they fought a war, just like ordinary people.
Mm-hmm.
It's neat. So a lot of assumptions on Scar's end of things mm-hmm. with regards to the Parshendi.
Yeah, and now that they see their home city, they're like, wow, these were sophisticated people.
Yeah.
It's cool.
And again, but what's interesting is that I hope that many of the other people moving through here are also realizing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
He glanced at Shen. No, Relaine. It was hard to remember, walking with spear to his shoulder. Relaine was as much of a member as Bridge 4 as anyone else, right? Would he rather have been painting than fighting? They passed Sentry. Yeah, what do you think about Relain? Like, he hasn't shown any descent.
He's just there.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't had much of a role yet. He's an outsider within the group, like Renarin, which is why Renarin goes to sit with him in that rock chapter.
Right.
Because they're similar in that way. They belong, but they're also outside of that belong. You know what I mean? Like they're the odd one out of that belong. Relain is still kind of a mystery. We know that he's committed to Bridge 4 because of all the things he did in Words of Radiance and coming back and all that stuff. We know that he hates that his people became these monsters, and he definitely was on the side of not bringing back the old gods, which are these...
The fused.
The Spren and stuff, right? These, like, ancient Spren. But we just don't know how he's feeling about everything right now. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? We are getting POVs from Bridge 4. So maybe we'll get a Relain. Yeah, maybe we'll get a Relain.
That would be awesome.
POV. Yeah.
I hope we get that. They passed sentry posts full of Dalinar's soldiers with red and light blue uniforms, Ruthar's colors. Dalinar was putting some of the other soldiers to work. Without the fighting on the Shattered Plains to keep the men focused, the men were getting restless.
Mm-hmm.
They passed a large group of soldiers. Skaar couldn't hold back a grin as he saw their black uniforms and helms. Plateau runs had been started again, and the spoils were shared equally among the High Princes. I like this, that the bridge runs bring, you know, smiles to their faces. I'm sure it's not just Skaar.
Yeah.
It's looking back on that experience as something that changed them forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely some sentimentality there.
I can't think of a greater gift to give someone than to look, there's maybe a few, but like to look back at a horrible event in your past and completely change it.
Right.
Like that's quite the gift.
Mm-hmm.
So today it was the Black Cap's turn. Skaar wondered if any of them would recognize him. Probably not, if he had caused considering the ruckus that he caused a while back during his application process.
Right.
There has been only one logical way to get the equipment he needed for his application. He'd stolen it from the Black Cap Quartermaster. So this is interesting.
Yeah.
So Skaar was arrested, became a slave as the result of being ambitious.
Yeah, he wanted to join the Black Caps.
There was no way.
They're like, we accept Dark Eyes, but you're a runt. Get yourself equipped and we'll talk. And so he was like, to show initiative, I tried to steal from them to show them that I could, you know, best them. And he got caught and... Went to prison, but went to the bridge runs.
Well, I find it funny how admission to this. So I want to be a part of it. I think that I would be a good contributor.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but you can't because you don't have the whatever amount in gemstones
to be able to purchase equipment. Yeah.
So so rather than let that stop him and just accept his fate. Oh, okay. I don't have $1 million. Well, then I guess I'll never be a part of the Black Caps.
Right.
He doesn't accept that.
Right.
And he says, okay, well, then what I'll do is I'll steal it, show them that I'm a good...
That I
can do this.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and not even... It's kind of like you're stealing it to basically prove the point.
Mm-hmm.
If you had this equipment, then you would be a contributor to this organization.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really interesting thing to say to someone, you know, to keep people out of a given thing based on...
It's a little gatekeepy.
It's really gatekeepy. And this goes on all the time.
Yeah.
We can relate this to many, many fields and spheres in our lives.
I mean, I think most fandoms are like that. There are groups of people in every fandom that are like this. I mean, you know, we haven't run into many of them, but... I'm sure that the Cosmere fandom, the Sanderson's fandom has people that are like that too. You know, you're not really a fan unless you do cosplay. You're not really a fan. Like, name me three of your favorite books. Like, you know that whole, like, oh, you really like them? Then name me three songs.
Oh, yeah, right.
Oh, they're your
yeah.
favorite song, favorite band? Name me three songs then. Like, that kind of attitude, yeah. like, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, and this extends itself into just material wealth mm-hmm. stopping you.
For sure. This is like an elitism type thing.
Yeah. So it's really interesting how, like, the talent pool. So the talent pool for the Black Caps only can be from people that are rich.
Think about all the amazing hockey players the world mm-hmm. never got because being in hockey is so damn expensive.
Expensive. Right. That's exactly my point. Yeah. It's access.
Right.
Right.
I think that's one of the reasons why this is a sidebar here, but this is one of the reasons why Snoop Dogg wants to be part of one of the ownership groups that are trying to buy the Ottawa Senators right now. Because he's saying, think about all the amazing athletes that we're missing out on in this sport because the sport is so expensive and it's, sure. you know, like inner city people, kids don't have access to those, the equipment and the fees and all that stuff, the tournaments.
Yeah, of course.
Like, think about all the amazing athletes that we're missing out on because, you know, like soccer and basketball, anyone can pick those up. You can kick a ball around a field. You can, you know, find a hoop to throw into.
Sure.
But hockey is not the same. You need all the equipment.
No.
You need.
No, it's
you
equipment.
You know what I mean? It's a little bit more gatekeepy in itself.
It's gatekeepy. Absolutely.
Yeah. Did we just coin a new saying, gatekeepy? I think we.
Gatekeepy. I like the word keepy.
I like keepy
too. I like keepy. Yeah. I like that. That's for keepsies.
Maybe the next, we'll name a city keepy.
Keepy. Oh, I like kelpies too. Okay. So he thought that this ingenuity of his by stealing would help him out, but no, of course this was not. He was so eager to be a Black Cap that he'd go to great lengths to join them, right? Wrong. His reward had been a slave brand, an eventual sale to Sadius's army.
Mm-hmm.
This is brutal. Like, I really feel for Scar in this. Mm-hmm. Like, he wasn't going to let, you know, the world stop him.
Yeah.
I'm not born rich. Well, okay, then I'm going to sidestep this. I'm going to do something that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to do it to show you that I belong in this. I can contribute to this organization.
Right, right.
Like, and then be branded a slave for it? Like, wow. Awful. Well, him and Kaladin, he was the only fighting man in Bridge 4 who still had his slave brand. Well, him and Kaladin, whose scars wouldn't heal for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
They reached the training plateau, crossing the old Bridge 4. Kaladin called a meeting of the officers as several of Rock's children set up a water station. Rock was enthused to have his family working with them. Mm-hmm. I love this little reminder.
Yeah.
I love
that they're here and that they're with them and stuff. Yeah.
They're running around doing things. Yeah. This is really great. Scar joined Kaladin, Sigzil, Teft, and Rock. Though they stood close, there was a conspicuous gap where Moash should have been.
Mm-hmm.
It felt so wrong to have a member of Bridge 4 completely unaccounted for. And Kaladin's silence on the topic hung over them like an executioner's axe. This is probably my highlight potentially for this chapter, mm-hmm. is the gap where Moash is.
Like, there's it's an actual physical gap there.
I know.
Like, they're standing around like he should be there, right? Yeah.
Oh, yes.
When you get goosebumps, Jack, you have to say it. You can't just pull your arm up into the camera view and show me. Because the listeners,
well, I'm showing
this is an audio format that the listeners have no clue.
Okay, it's so fine. Okay, great. It's a goosebump. It's a keepy.
Yeah.
See,
I like it. It's so keepy.
It's so keepy.
Yeah.
I love that moment because I love that they're gathering, okay, and they leave a gap.
Yeah.
That's almost
could,
like they're
like
waiting for
up,
him to return.
Right, like he could just show up at any moment. Yeah.
Yes, I love it. It's full of hope.
I'm showing you my arm now.
There you go. You're showing me. That's a keepy.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a keepy one.
I'm worried, Kaladin says, that nobody practicing with us has begun breathing Stormlight. Well, it's only been 2 weeks, Sigs says. True, but still thinks several feel right, though she won't tell me who, as she says that would be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I asked Call, is it General Call, to send me another batch of hopefuls because I figured the more people we had, the better our chances finding new squires. He pauses. I didn't specify they couldn't be light eyes. Perhaps I should have. Don't see why, sir, Scar says, pointing. That's Captain Kolot, good man. He helped us explore. Just wouldn't feel right having light-eyed men in Bridge 4. Other than you, Scar asks. And Renarin? And, well, any of us who earn our own blades and maybe Rock, who I think might have been light-eyed among his people, even if he has dark. Fine, Scar, you've made your point. So it's interesting.
I like
here.
This.
And Scar, well, I like it too because Scar's been the victim of the gatekeep.
Right.
And so why should we now gatekeep the light eyes?
Right.
If they genuinely
it's
want to do this.
Kind of the opposite of what Moash would say in this moment. Moash would say, if he was
probably
in this meeting filling that spot,
yeah,
he would
yeah,
say, yeah,
that's
good,
true.
Let them not get in. They don't
yeah,
fucking
because
deserve
he's still
to be
relishing,
part of us.
Right.
But Scar's like, actually, there's you, there's Renarin, there's anyone who will
right.
end up getting a blade. If any of us get a blade,
right.
then we'll be light eyes. There's Rock, who is dark eyed, but he's got the status of a light eyes. So, like, really? Are we really going to keep them out for no reason? I like
right.
this from Scar a lot.
I do too. You're right. And it's almost a better highlight in a way, but I still think the gap.
Yeah.
The gap's good, but this from Scar is really good.
Yeah,
right.
You can get really, really nice, like, well-made t-shirts from the gap. Continue.
You can. Well-made. Fine, Scar. I didn't even know the gap was still a thing.
No, I don't think so. I don't even know.
Fine, Scar, Kaladin says, point made. Anyway, we don't have a lot of time before I leave with Elokar.
Yeah,
I'd like
coming.
To... What, the Elokar excursion?
Yeah, that's coming, right? Like, he's this is the moment where he's like, we don't have a lot of time left to train.
Right.
I'm leaving
right.
soon. It's like letting the reader know this
oh,
mission's coming
so
soon.
I am so excited for that mission.
Yeah.
Is it, like, the part, like basically, like, the meat of the book? Is that the...
Dude, it's so good.
Is that the big...
It's so good. You know what's funny is that it's... You would think that that mission would end up being like the denouement or
the final denouement.
It's like the Sanderlanch of the story.
Yeah,
It's not.
What? You're giving me a nugget.
I'm
it's
giving
not?
You a tiny little nugget here.
Oh,
there is so much
morsel.
More in this book to come, bro. Yeah.
A morsel.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's only a part of the book.
Yeah.
Mmm, delicious.
We're only in part two, bro. There's five parts to this book.
That's right.
If the
yeah,
mission's
so, okay,
coming
so
soon.
So maybe part three is this is the mission. Maybe that's the way they...
Maybe.
Okay. Okay, point made. Anyway, I'd like to push it. Okay. I'm leaving with Elokar soon. I'd like to push the recruits harder to see if they're likely to be able to swear the oaths. Any thoughts? He asks. Shove them off the edge of plateau, Rock says. Those who fly, we let in. No, are there any serious suggestions? Kaladin asks. Let me run through some formations, Tef says. A good idea, says Kaladin. I wish we knew how the Radiance used to handle expansion. Were there recruitment drives, or did they just wait until someone attracted a spren? Tef says, that wouldn't make them a squire, though. But a full Radiant, right? A valid point, Sigzil says. We have no proof that we squires are a step toward becoming full Radiance. We might always be just your support team. And in that case, it's not individual skill that matters, but your decision. Maybe that of your spren. You choose them. They serve under you, and then they start drawing in Stormlight.
This is a really good point.
Hmm.
Some of these men could become their own Radiant, but that
right.
doesn't necessarily mean that they are on their way to becoming Radiants. They could always
right.
just be squires. They could always
right.
just be support staff to the Radiant, right?
That's right.
And that could be enough because, look, they're doing amazing things just being that. Just
yeah,
being squires, they're doing awesome things.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's really interesting to think about, like, what does it mean? Like, how does this all level up, right?
Right. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Scar says, uncomfortable. They all glance at him. The first of you that says something placating, Scar says, gets a fist in the face or the stomach. If I can't reach your storming, stupid horn-eater face. Ah, Rock says, you could hit my face, Scar. I have seen you jump very high. Almost you seem as tall as regular person when you do that. That's funny.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Teft, Kaladin says, go ahead and run those potential recruits through formations and tell the rest of the men to watch the sky. I'm worried about more raids on the caravans. Something about those raids doesn't add up. The war camp's parshmen, by all reports, have marched to Alethkar, but why would those fused keep harrying us? They won't have the troops to take advantage of any supply problems they cause. So why do you think?
Well,
just distraction tactic?
I guess. I mean, we don't really know the motivation of this new group that is the fused. We don't know anything about them. We don't know what they're after, what they want. So to try to just guess why they're, or more specifically, why Kaladin feels like there's something up with these raids.
These raids don't add up.
It could just be them testing the other group and seeing how well they fight and seeing, you know what I mean? Like, it could just be that, but we don't really know what their motivations are yet.
Yeah, I don't know. Scar shared a glance with Sigzil, who shrugs. Kaladin talked like this sometimes differently from the rest. He'd trained them in formations in the spear, and they could proudly call themselves soldiers. But they only actually fought a few times. And what they did know of what did they know about strategy and battlefield tactics? The group breaks off, Teft jogging off to do the drills, and Kaladin set Bridge forward as studying their flying. Scar attended to Kaladin as he observed the recruits. The light eyes didn't voice a single complaint about being filed into ranks with dark eyes. Mm-hmm. But there were far, far more of them who did normal jobs, though granted, they got paid better for those jobs than the dark eyed did. So another social commentary there.
Yeah.
Kaladin watched, then glanced at the bridge four in the sky. I wonder, Scar, he says, how important are formations going to be for us going forward? Can we devise new ones to use in flying? Everything changes when your enemy can attack from all sides.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it?
Yeah, the stuff what that kind of... he's been taught by his squad leaders before and now that he's taught to this group of men... How right. relevant is that going to be when you're flying in the air?
So it's almost like achieving flight or being able to fly mm-hmm. or lash properly is the beginning of another set of training.
Right.
It almost like because you learn the spear on the ground, you've learned how to fight here. Mm-hmm. Right. Then you learn how to fly. Now your training begins over again
right.
because the tactics
are
all going to change.
A whole new set of tactics and formations.
Right.
And
interesting.
And the unfortunate part is that no one knows how to do that.
Right.
There's no one to be able to teach them how to do formations in the air. You know, they're going to have to come up with it themselves.
It's too bad the information just can't, you know... keep getting passed on from the desolations.
It's like, funny, because both these chapters have a moment where that's said. Kaladin says, Storms, I wish we knew how the Radiants used to handle expansion. Were there recruit
right.
drives, or did they just wait till someone attracted a spren? So he's saying that too.
Right.
I wish we knew how they did it. And then I'll
right.
point it out in the next chapter, but Yasna says the almost like very close to the same thing.
She does.
She has yeah. a moment where she's like, I wish we knew what they did back in the day kind of thing. I'll point it out when we get to the next chapter.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Were these people, were these new recruits going to start glowing and take his place in Bridge 4? This is a thought that Scar has.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to replace him?
Right.
Would he be shuffled to other duties while someone else laughed with the crew and got ribbed for their height?
So there Stormed, you go.
He thought.
Ribbed
What's
for
that?
Their height.
Yeah. So he's
a little shorter of a dude.
Shorter person.
Yeah.
I hate feeling sorry for myself, he says. Or he thinks, I hadn't sulked when the Black Caps had turned him down, and he wouldn't sulk now. He was fishing in his pocket for gemstone, in terms of, he was determined to practice, and when he spotted Lynn sitting on a rock, she was slouching, and he read frustration in her posture. Well, he knew that feeling. So Scar shouldered his spear and sauntered over. The four other scout women had gone to the water station. Rock let out a bellowing laugh at what one of them was saying.
Mm-hmm.
Not joining in? Scar asks. I don't know the formation, Scar. I've never done drills. Never even held a storming spear. I ran messages and scouted the planes. I didn't pick it up fast enough, did I? She asks. He'd gone and gotten some people new to test, and she says, since I failed. He says, don't be stupid. You're not being forced out. Kaladin just wants to have as many people, as many potential recruits as possible. So she also is feeling this pressure looking at the other these other recruits thinking, well, am I going to be passed on?
Because he did, you know, he, remember at first he was all like, oh yeah, you want to join us? Sure, you can be our scribe. And she's like, that's not what I want. And he's like, oh, okay, well then there will be open, you know, a tryouts. So if you want to come and try out and see if you can do, great. And now she's like, I was, you know, I had this opportunity and now I'm squandering it. Because I'm not able to do the thing that they're looking for me to do.
That they're looking for.
I can't even do the thing that you do. Like, at the very least, Scar is a great soldier.
Spearman.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He's a great spearman. He's a great soldier.
Sure.
He ran that circuit in 10 minutes, under 10 minutes, without Stormlight. And they said the Drahi with Stormlight did it in 6 minutes.
Six.
Which is, I think, pretty damn good. Imagine if Scar had
really
Stormlight
good,
being able to run it. He'd probably be one of the fastest dudes, right?
That's right.
So, yeah, I like this.
Everyone knows that we're in a new world now, she says. A world where rank and eye color don't matter. And I want to be a part of it. So badly. He says, yeah. She looks at him and probably saw it in his eyes. That same emotion. I hadn't even thought, Scar. Must be worse for you. He shrugged and reached into his pocket, taking out an emerald as big as his thumb. It shone fiercely. I want to comment just on this, actually. I just thought of it now in terms of the language. In the next chapter, Ivory is described as he never shrugs.
Mm-hmm.
And in this chapter, we're getting, I think it's been used a few times with Scar. He shrugged and reached into his pouch, taking out an emerald as big as his thumb. It shone fiercely. You ever hear about the first time Captain Stormblessed drew in light? Yeah, he told us. That day after he knew he could do it because Tef told him. No, not that day. Well, you mean while he was healing? After the high storm when he was strung up? Not that day either, Scar says.
I love this so much. This is my highlight.
Because he know. Because
the stories are out there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's referring to something very specific. And she's like, oh, you mean this one? Oh, no, no. You mean this one?
Yeah.
She's already learned the lore of Kaladin Stormblessed.
The lore of
the
Kaladin
story
Stormblessed,
of him having done all these things is out there amongst the people. And I really love it. It's so great.
I was there. Second row. It was a bridge run. Bad one. We were charging the plateau and a lot of Parshendi had set up. They dropped most of us in the first row, all but Kaladin. And that exposed me right beside him, second row. In those days, you didn't have to have good odds running near the front. The Parshendi wanted to take down our bridge, and they focused their shots on us, on me. And I knew I was dead. I knew it. I saw the arrows coming, and I breathed a last prayer, hoping the next life wouldn't be quite so bad. And then the arrows moved, Lynn. They storming swerved toward Kaladin. There's a special lashing that you can do, which makes things curve in the air. And Kaladin painted the wood above his hands with Stormlight and drew the arrows toward him instead of me. And that's the first time I can say I knew something special was happening.
Mm-hmm. And see, this is great because we didn't know then that one of the men noticed it, right?
No, we didn't know that one of the men noticed
it. They all saw the arrows afterwards like, what the fuck? But like Scar saw the arrows actually swerve.
Right.
Amazing, dude. I love this like little rewriting of our history.
Going back into Way of Kings,
Veristatalian, going back and re-examining for new information.
He knew something special was happening. He places the gemstone into her hand as he's talking to her. Back then, Kaladin did it without even knowing what he was doing. Maybe we're just trying too hard, you know? But it doesn't make sense, she says. They say you have to suck it up. What does that even mean? I've no idea, Scar says. They each describe it differently, and it's breaking my brain trying to figure it out. They talk about a sharp intake of breath, only not really for breathing. Which is perfectly clear. Tell me about it. Scar says, tapping the gemstone in her palm. It worked best for Kaladin when he didn't stress. It was harder when he focused on making it happen. So I'm supposed to accidentally but deliberately breathe something in without breathing, but not try too hard at it? Doesn't it just make you want to string a lot of them in the storms? But their advice is all we've got, so... She looked at the stone and then held it to her face and breathed in, but nothing happened. She tried again and again for a solid 10 minutes. I don't know, Scar, she says, finally lowering the stone. I keep thinking maybe I don't belong here. If you haven't noticed, none of the women have managed this. I kind of forced my way among you all, and nobody asked to stop, he says, taking the emerald and holding it before her. Stop right there. You want to be a windrunner? More than anything, she whispered.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because I want to soar. Not good enough. Kaladin, he wasn't thinking about being left out or how great it would be to fly. He was thinking about saving the rest of us, saving me. Why do you want to be in the Windrunners? Because I want to help. I want to do something other than stand around, waiting for the enemy to come to us. Well, you have a chance, Lynn. A chance nobody has had for ages. A chance in millions. Either you seize it, and in so doing, decide you're worthy, or you leave and give up. He pressed the gemstone back down into her hand. But if you leave... You don't get to complain. As long as you keep trying, there's a chance. When you give up, that's when the dream dies.
Mm-hmm.
She met his eyes, closed her fist around the gemstone, and breathed in with a sharp, distinct breath, and then started glowing. Pretty great.
That's pretty awesome, dude. His little speech is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She yelped in surprise and opened her hand to find the gemstone within it done. She looked at him in awe. What did you do? You know what? I gotta give this one to Scar.
Mm-hmm.
I really do.
Yeah.
I think that he has potentially a gift. Has
a
he
way
not
of
helped
being
someone
able
else?
To talk to them, a way of
yeah,
being able to
his
guide
empathy,
them. Yeah.
Like he sees Lynn, you know, notices her. I know what she's going through. It's he's empathic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This realization for Lynn, I think, sure, we can contribute it. It's her. But I think that he had a small role to play here.
Yeah, well, she starts, like, piling on this idea that she doesn't belong. Maybe I don't belong
right.
here. If you haven't
right.
noticed, there's no women that have been able to do this. I
right.
forced my way into this. And he's just like,
right.
stop.
Stop. Yeah.
He's like, you want to be a windrunner? Like, none of that stuff
Why?
Matters.
Yeah.
The fact that you're right. a woman, the fact that you know,
nope.
you don't feel like you belong here, the fact, all that stuff, none of that matters. Do you want
right.
this? It's cool. It's like, he's a great coach.
Yeah, he's wiping away all the things that are getting in the way,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that I think is his, that's part of what he's offering Bridge for
right.
here.
Is, I kind of,
you know,
is there a part of you that kind of wishes he hadn't been able to breathe in Stormlight and that his lot in it was just helping others achieve?
Yes, that's what I was hoping Scar was a conduit
right.
with which Stormlight passed through. So then when the spheres are done, right,
mm-hmm.
it's not just because of the person that was there that absorbed it.
Yeah.
It's that it went through him first and then to
yeah.
someone else because he's guiding and teaching.
Or even
and,
if it doesn't do it magically, he's just
yeah.
inspiring them to achieve through
yeah.
words and actions and understanding and stuff. Do you know
right.
what I mean? Like, even if it's not mm-hmm. a mystical reason where he's actually has the Stormlight go through him and all that stuff, like it would have been, I mean, I'm glad that he gets it here at the end. You're going to finish
yeah.
it up here. But I'm
mm-hmm.
glad he gets
yeah,
it,
yeah.
but it's his acceptance of maybe this is all I am. Maybe the point of me is to help others do it. And he says it to her earlier, right? He says to, you know, why did Kaladin just try to save me?
Right.
And why do you want to do it? And she's like, I just want to help. And when Scar finally just puts it down and goes, you know what? I might never achieve this, but at the very least, I'll be happy helping others.
Right.
That's honorable.
And that's when
it happens.
Honorable. Right. And that, so I love all that and I'm glad that he got it.
Yeah.
But you're right. Like there was a part of me, I kind of almost prefer this idea that the Stormlight passes through him quickly. So maybe it could have been reported that he has like bursts of Stormlight when he's dealing with someone.
Right.
And then it goes away.
Like
and
he has
can't
little scars that heal or something, like little, like some of his pains and aches go away because he does get it temporarily for a moment.
Temporarily.
It would have been very cool. It is a very cool what if or like another scenario. Yeah. Like a
Well, it's almost like it's like he's buffing others.
Right.
Like he's, you know, always helping others achieve. But also it speaks to his frustration with trying to become a member of the Black Caps. He's lifting the gates.
Right.
He's letting others in.
Yeah, that's
right?
True.
Like playing that role, as you said, of coach. Mm-hmm. You know, he's oh, you've got
that
this
can't
in the
do
way.
Teach, right? Those that can't do coach or whatever, like that, whatever that old adage is, which I don't really believe, but.
No, I don't really believe that one. Either.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, you're right. There was a part of me that did want him not to get it.
Right.
But it's also nice.
It's
as
also
well
great. He can still help others achieve while still having achieved himself too. It just, it would have been a really cool lane for him to possess.
She started glowing and she says, what did you do? Nothing. He says, which was the problem. Still, he found he couldn't be jealous. Maybe this was his lot, helping others, becoming radiant. A trainer, a facilitator,
right.
A coach. Teft saw Lynn glowing and then dashed over and started cursing. Good. Teft curses. Mm-hmm. He grabbed her by the arm and towed her toward Kaladin. So, you know what? You cut the umbilical too soon, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, Scar helped facilitate this with Lynn together.
It's as
and
much
then it's like right
Scar's
away,
achievement as it is Lynn's achievement.
Right.
Yeah,
but it's taken away from him right away.
Yeah.
So I was like, when I was reading this, I'm like, oh, wait.
Lynn
like,
being able to just do this, though, is a really big moment because they said earlier in the chapter, so far, only people who were part of the original bridge crew were able to do it. She's the first outsider who joined afterwards that were able to do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she was able to find the right state of mind to allow that Stormlight to come in.
Right. She took a, Scar took in a long, satisfied breath. Well, that was two that he'd helped so far, counting Rock.
So that's three.
He could live with that, couldn't he? What's that?
That's three altogether.
Three. Yeah, but he says two, but
yeah.
He strolled over to the drink station and got another cup. What is this foul stuff, Rock? He asks. You didn't mistake the washing water for tea, did you? It's an old horn eater recipe. It's a proud tradition. Leg skipping. Leg formal war dance. And hitting annoying bridgemen on the head for not showing proper respect. Scar turned around and leaned on one hand on the table, watching Lynn's enthusiasm as her squad of scouts ran up to her. He felt good about what he'd done. Strangely good. Excited, even. I think I'm going to have to get used to smelly horn eaters, Rock. I'm thinking of joining your support team. You think I will let you anywhere near my cookpot? I might not ever learn to fly, he says. I need to come to terms with the fact. So I'll have another way to help out. Ha! And the fact that you're now glowing with Stormlight right now is not at all consideration in decision? Scar froze. Then he focused on his hand, right in front of his face, holding a cup. Tiny wisps of Stormlight curled off of it. He dropped the cup with a cry, digging from his pocket a couple of dun chips. He'd given his practice gemstone to Lynn. He looked up at Rock and then grinned stupidly. I suppose, Rock said, I can maybe have you wash dishes, though you do keep throwing my cups on the ground. It's not proper respect at all. He trailed off as Scar left him running for the others and whooping with excitement.
Yeah.
So it's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's a great, I love it. And the humor with Rock is great. But yeah, there's part of me that just was wanting him to be without it, and that was part of his role somehow. You're right.
Yeah, there's space for the ordinary, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's space for the ordinary people too. And mm-hmm. But I love Ra. I love Scar. I think he's going to be
no,
a great.
He's great.
He's going to be a great Windrunner or Squire because he's proven that he can do a bunch of awesome stuff without the Stormlight. Just think what he's going to do with that Stormlight now. Oh, he's going to be beating Drahi's time in no time.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So highlight for you is
the retelling of the stories of
the
how
retelling of the
Lynn
stories,
knows
some
the of
the
story, but she doesn't. And then Scar's like, I was there that day. Like, I just love that so much. It's so cool.
I like how he corrected her.
Yeah.
You know, like he's like, oh yeah, you've heard this and you've heard that. And that's true.
Yeah. Those happened. But that wasn't the first time.
But here's what really happened.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, that sort of thing.
There was a time before those times where I saw it. I saw the arrows swerve.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's when I knew something was happening. Yeah.
It's so good, man.
I wonder if he himself had to look back on his own memories.
I think
and wonder when the first time Kaladin.
If we were to go back and look through Way of Kings, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw that after that bridge run and those arrows, that thing, Scar was like, yep, I'm with you. Didn't say why, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was when things changed
for Scar. Fascinating to go back.
Yeah.
I'll maintain my highlight as being the gap.
Yeah. With Moash.
Where Moash is expected
to
really
be. It's really
great. It's almost like he's there anyways.
I love how you said it's like they're waiting for him to show up.
Yeah.
Like they're just like they've left us a place at the table for him and they're just he's just going to walk through
the door
at some point.
They're still putting out a plate.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool.
Dude, amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so chapter 47.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, so much is lost.
I love this. Well, this is a tiny chapter, but I have so many notes. Like
it gives a punch, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, it's a Hawaiian punch.
It's a Tahiti treat. So much is lost. So much is found.
Mm-hmm. So much is lost. So much is found. Yeah.
Indeed, it starts out, indeed, we admire his initiative. Perhaps if you had approached the correct one of us with your plea, it would have found a favorable audience. Mm-hmm. That's their cryptic little message here.
So, indeed, we admire his initiative. Do you think they're talking about Raze again here? Or do you think they're talking about a different person?
I think they're talking about Raze. Okay. Yeah. That's what I think.
Like I said in the previous chapter, when all these bits get put together, things might become a little more clear. So it'll be exciting whenever we get to read them all together.
We admire his initiative. The correct one of us could be Dalinar.
Maybe.
We admire his initiative.
Maybe.
Wanting to unite them and wanting to
they
refound
were just
the
talking
Knights Radiant.
About Raze, though, right? They were just talking
about
Raze.
That's right,
they
were.
So I don't know.
I think it's Raze, but...
Yeah, it could be other people too, for sure.
Okay. So it begins, I am Talenel Ellen. Talenel?
Mm-hmm.
Talenel Ellen, Herald of War. The time of the return. The desolation is near at hand. We must prepare. You will have forgotten much following the destruction of the times past. Kallak will teach you to cast in bronze. We will soul cast blocks of metal directly for you. I wish that we could teach you steel, but casting is so much easier than forging. Your stone tools will not serve against what is to come. Videl can train your surgeons, and Yezrian will teach you leadership. So much is lost between the returns. I will train your soldiers. Ishar keeps talking about ways to keep information from being lost. Following desolations, and you have discovered something unexpected. Surgebinders to act as guardians or knights. The coming days will be difficult, but with training, humanity will survive. You must bring me to your leaders. The other heralds should join us soon. I think I am late this time. I fear, O God, that I have failed. No, this is not right, is it? How long has it been? Where am I? I am Talenel Ellen, Herald of War. The time of the return, the desolation is near at hand.
So
goes back to repeating himself.
Yeah. So we were there when he was doing that blurb.
Right.
When he was the madman, when he was in custody. So this is her reading the accounts. And right. by her, I have to
you
say
mean
the
Yasna.
Name Yasna. So first, the first thing I want to say is, other than the prelude in Words of Radiance,
right,
when she was hiring assassins to make sure that nobody got to hire assassins against them, this is her first POV chapter.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? You finally get inside the mind of
it's,
the one and
it's
only.
It's great. It's great. It's a long time coming. I love it. And I have to admit, I like Ivory.
Me too. That's the first time we get Ivory too.
I really like Ivory.
Yeah.
Like a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm big time into him.
The most interesting, so remember I said earlier that there's a part in the last chapter where they're like, you know, I just wish that we knew more about what the heralds would or what the Radiance would have done back in the day.
Right.
There's a part in this little blurb that made me like, oh. It's when he says,
what?
Ishar.
Right.
Where is it here?
Ishar
keeps talking about a way to keep information from being lost following desolations.
Desolations, right.
So Ishar is another herald. So that's the most interesting part of that little blurb to me, because Kaladin was just saying, man, I wonder, it would be awesome to know what the Radiance did in the back, like back in the past.
Right.
And Talonel Ellen here, Herald of War, was saying Ishar was working on a way to keep information from being destroyed after desolations.
What do you think about these heralds that so part of what I love about this chapter is the beginning where the madman, where Talonel Ellen is basically giving us what the heralds would do for mankind.
Right.
So I'm going to train your soldiers. Kaelak is going to teach you how to cast bronze, and Ishar is going to try to maintain the information.
Mm-hmm.
We already see these things being done now here.
Right. And the reason
not
why
with heralds
is because the time in between desolations now is so long that the people on Roshar were able to figure all that out on their own. They evolved naturally after 4,500 years.
Right. But what I'm trying to get at is there a connection between Ishar and Yasna?
Right. That's a good question.
So what I'm trying to get at is there a connection if Talonel Ellen is going to train soldiers for war, does Talonel Ellen have a direct and intrinsic link to either Kaladin or Dalinar, something to that effect? Mm-hmm. Or let's see, teach you how to cast in bronze.
There are no links to them.
Well, to cast in bronze, it's a casting. So wouldn't that it's a soul casting? Wouldn't that have to do with Navani?
Maybe. I see what I see the lines you're trying to draw here.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there are any threads that connect them.
I'm trying to draw lines between heralds and characters.
Right. And there are some that are like, you know, Yezrian is the Windrunner patron. So there's going to be some lines between him and Kaladin, because Kaladin is our first Windrunner, right?
Right.
And so those kind of connecting lines are going to be there. But I don't know if necessarily because Kellic will cast bronze and Navani makes a Fabrials, or she's part of a Fabrial making team.
Right.
I don't know if they're really connected. Yeah.
No, but. Perhaps then what I'm thinking of too is that our characters taking on the responsibilities of the heralds. So where the heralds failed or didn't complete certain things, other characters are going to take those responsibilities from heralds themselves and take that on.
I see what you're saying. Navani and her group are creating new inventions all the time. So is she taking over the role of a herald who would be teaching people how to create things?
Right.
I see what you're saying here. There might be some kind of like more metaphorical correlation there where, you know, the old heralds are gone and they're not really helping. So new people have to step up in their place. I get that.
Yeah.
I guess the reason why I brought this up again and brought it over was I wanted to ask you, do you think Ishar was successful? He keeps talking about a way.
It remains to
keep information
to be seen.
From being lost from desolations. How, did he figure out a way? And did these mortals just not find that?
So it could be that. Okay. So Ishar, as far as we have been able to read, Ishar has failed.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because okay. they don't know anything about past desolations and stuff.
Right. Right?
Yeah.
And, the, and as you gone. And as you said, the time is so great. They've had to reinvent things yep. and bring things
Learn
back
themselves.
After
yep.
all over again. Yep. Right. So a painstaking process. So based on what we've read, Ishar has failed. But that doesn't mean Ishar has failed.
No. It
the
just means
information
it
could have
uncovered.
Been stored.
Yeah. Right.
It just hasn't been discovered yet.
Right. Right.
So that there could be a great discovery, like from Ishar.
There could be. But you're right in saying that so far there
so
hasn't
far.
Been.
Right.
And it does prove that if and if he, if there hasn't been, which it seems like there hasn't been, these mm-hmm. the things that these heralds had set out to do have not really helped mankind. Mankind has had to help themselves.
Themselves, right. right. To take it on.
So
right.
it kind of does go with what you were saying earlier, where
right.
these mortals, these new people have to step in as
right.
these, not new heralds, but like a more metaphorical
Completing.
One. Yeah, like, yeah.
Taking on those roles.
Yeah, I like that a lot, actually. Now that I like that we've talked it out, too. I like that.
Okay, so Yasna trembled as she read the madman's words. She turned over the sheet and found the next one covered in similar ideas, repeating over and over. This kind of reminded me of the character Jack in The Shining, where it's just the madman on a loop. He's just repeating the same thing over and over.
Mm-hmm.
The abandoned herald had come to Kolinar and had been dismissed as a madman. She leans back in her seat and Ivory, her spren, full-sized, like a human, stepped over to the table. His hands clasped behind his back. He wore his usual stiff, formal suit. The Spren's coloring was jet black, both clothing and features, though something prismatic swirled on his skin. It was as if pure black marble had been coated in oil that glistened with hidden color. I love this description mm-hmm. of this character.
Yeah.
I want to see artistic depictions of Ivory.
There is one. Remember, I
did you
find,
post it already?
I did find a picture of Yasna and Ivory standing together. There are a couple of them, but the one that I used, I can't remember who the artist was, but it was fantastic.
It
Let me just do a quick
was it really
search
good?
Here. Yeah. This like black... oily, like kind of a rainbow-esque on the black. Yeah, it was
That's
amazing.
That's how I'm kind of picturing it, too. Yeah.
Let me see if it's somewhere here. Yeah, right here.
Oh, I see it. Oh, wow. That's perfect.
Isn't it great?
That's so good.
I like how the, like, it's like dark,
oh,
but
I
then
love
also
it.
Those lines of like kind of like rainbowy.
Yeah, the rainbow, like iridescent quality to them. Yeah, that's amazing.
It's like when you're walking over and someone's car's been leaking a little bit and you can see the puddle and the light hits it a certain
that's
way.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's great. No, and that's a perfect, that depiction is almost pretty close to what I was imagining. That's that's wonderful.
Yeah, I love it.
Who's the artist of that picture?
I should probably say.
Amazing.
It's Redditor named Little Gray Dragon.
Little Gray Dragon.
Yeah, so if Little Gray Dragon is out there listening, amazing, amazing Ivory.
Amazing
depiction
of Ivory. Yeah, absolutely nailed it. Okay, so she leaned back in her seat, Ivory, full size, hands clasped. Spren's coloring was jet black, prismatic, like oily sort of component to skin. Yasna had rejected the nice rooms with the balconies because they were such an obvious entrance for assassins or spies.
Mm-hmm.
Her small room was at the center of Dalinar's section and was far more secure. She'd stuffed the ventilation with cloth so that nobody could overhear from the adjoining shafts. This is a little small highlight for me too. With Yasna. It's just she's a thinker. She's proactive, and not to mention, she's already suffered an assassination attempt. She doesn't exactly want to incur another
one.
She
let her guard down once, and she will not let that guard down again.
Right. So, I love this about her. In the corner of the room, three span reeds worked tirelessly. They were paired with reeds and tashik, and had been delivered to one of their finest and most trustworthy information centers in the princedom. There, miles and miles away, a scribe was carefully rewriting each page of her notes, which she had originally sent to them to keep safe. This is a backup drive.
Dude, it is.
That's what
like
she's doing.
She literally did a backup of her information.
Yeah.
It's like she remembered to hit save in her Skyrim game and didn't waste 4 hours of gameplay like I do. You know, I just battled a dragon and killed it. And then I'm like, and then I got killed by an orc just easily. And I'm like, fuck, I didn't save it. Motherfucker. This is so awesome, though.
You know what's funny is that, like, I want her to be able to accomplish this. I want her to carry on where Ishar left off, to be able to keep the information.
Mm-hmm. It is really cool.
She, in the
boat, when the boat sunk, she lost a lot of stuff. Shallan was able to recover one trunk of stuff, but she says in this chapter here, but a lot of stuff was lost.
Was lost.
All her most important stuff she sent to Tashik for safekeeping, which is really smart.
I think she said here that the two trunks that were lost, she did back them up.
Yeah, this is what this is.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's so forward thinking.
Yeah.
Yasna is just I love her. She's
you know
amazing.
What it is too? It makes me think of those moments in D&D when you take kind of like a mundane spell or a couple of mundane spells and you've figured a loophole out with it where you can like, oh, I'm going to use the spell in this way. And then the DM's like, holy shit, did you just do that? That's a whole new way of
taking... That's a whole new way of
like,
doing
it. Like, span read is supposed to be about communication, talking from one person to another person in a long distance. But what she's literally done is she's used it as a backup. She's backed up her work. Like, it's amazing, bro. I love it so much.
This speaker, Yasna, Ivory said, tapping the sheet that she just read, this one who said these words, this person is a herald. Our suspicions are true. The heralds are, and the fallen one still is. We need to find him, Yasna says. We must search Shadesmar, Ivory says. In the world, men can hide easily, but their souls shine out to us on the other side.
How cool is that?
Mm-hmm. Their souls shine out to us on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And because she's an Elskaller, her whole thing is traveling between realms. Like, that's one of her abilities to do that, is to open up portals and or whatever and easily
and go
over to Shadesmar. So, like, it makes total sense. He can hide from me here, but he can't hide from us over there.
Right.
It's really cool.
Unless someone knows how to hide them.
Right.
Yasna offers.
Mm-hmm.
Ivory looked toward the growing stack of notes in the corner. One of the pens had just finished writing. Yasna rose to change the paper. Shallan had rescued one of her trunks of notes, but two others had gone down with the sinking ship. Fortunately, Yasna had sent off these backup copies.
Amazing.
Amazing. A highlight. Mm-hmm. Or did it matter? This sheet encrypted by her cipher contained lines and lines of information connecting the parchment to the Voidbringers. Once she'd slaved over each of these passages, teasing them from history. But now, their contents were common knowledge. In one moment, all of her expertise had been wiped away.
It is kind of shitty, right?
I understand. I guess I would word it like this. It's about possession. When you possess something,
mm-hmm.
whether it's knowledge, whether it's skill, talent,
mm-hmm.
Art, things, you want to own it before you can share it.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be a component of how we work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like with children, you expect children to share, but they also need to possess in order to share.
Yeah.
They have to learn how I can keep the ball before maybe they can learn how to share it.
Right.
So with information, like it's a really interesting series of ideas to think about. Like it's all over in a second. Yasna puts in all this work and then it's shared with the entire world and now everybody's caught up.
Right.
And there's a part of you that feels like you've been cheated maybe somehow
mm-hmm.
in this. But that is because there's a possessive quality to us that we need to fight against.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like if you love someone, set them free.
Right.
Because you can't hang on to it.
Yeah.
If you hang on to it, you'll spoil it. You'll ruin it. You'll ruin it for yourself. You'll ruin it for others. You have to be willing. It's like, that's what the internet has done for the planet.
Right.
It's reduced the gap between people that have and people that don't, especially particularly with regards to information.
Right.
Right.
I see this moment with Yasna as being that joke from the Big Bang Theory. When they're
what's that?
When they're like, did anything really happen in Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Right.
So, it's like she spent
that's funny.
All this time.
Did Indiana Jones affect the story
years
at all?
Researching all this stuff. And then the Battle of the Everstorm was going to happen whether or not she did all that research anyways.
Right.
Right? So like, I don't know. The one thing it did do, though, is her research, the stuff that she did work on, did help guide Shallan in the right direction.
Sure.
It did help the Battle of the Everstorm in that Shallan said, I only have one request, Dalinar. You can't take your Parshmen with you when you go out to the plateaus.
Right. Because
if he had, they would have turned, and then that could have been a full slaughter.
It could have been. Yeah.
So as much as she feels like her information her research was kind of useless.
Yeah.
It did have small significance in those two moments.
Yeah.
So
I think so. And even at the very least, if the information is connecting the Parshmen with the Voidbringers, in which she was fairly convinced that that's the case and really was partially right.
Yeah.
She wasn't completely right. But I almost feel like the purpose of putting out any information is to have someone else attempt to discredit it.
Right.
And that's where someone like Kaladin comes in, where he's like, well, hang on. I've spent time with them. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a different perspective to offer here. They're not these, they're not all Voidbringers.
Yeah.
This is not the whole truth here.
Yeah.
So she says, we've lost so much time. Ivory says, yes. We must catch what we have lost, Yasna.
She's literally repeating what Talon El Elyn just said. We've lost so much time.
Lost so much time.
Yeah.
The enemy, Yasna asks. The enemy stirs and he angers Ivory. Shook his head, kneeling beside her as she changed the sheets of paper. We are not before him, Yasna. He would destroy my kind and yours.
Do you know? You know who they're talking about, right?
Not exactly. He would destroy my kind and yours?
Yeah. Talking about Odium.
Odium.
Yeah, the enemy.
The span read finished, and another started writing out the first lines of her memoirs. What do you think of Shallan? She asks Ivory. The person that she's become. Ivory frowned, lips drawing tight. His sharply chiseled features, too angular to be human, were like those of a roughed-out statue the sculptor had neglected to finish. She's troubling, he said. That much hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. She is not stable, Ivory says. Ivory, you think all humans are unstable. Not you, he says, lifting his chin. You are like a spren. You think by facts, and you change not on simple whims. You are as you are. It's funny his perspective here. You change not on whims. What about Syl? She's all whim.
Yeah, she's
only whim. Do you not know your own spren?
She could be whim spren.
She is, whim spren. That's it. We're going to find out the end of this book. Oh, yeah, by the way, guys. The whole
I'm
honor
not honor spren.
No.
I've been fooling
whim
you guys.
Spren.
Yeah.
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 It's
I'm
whim spren.
Yeah.
It was a typo when Sanderson was writing whim spren. It was actually whim spren. It was actually whim spren. And then the publisher's like, well, we can't change it now. We printed everything. So it's going to be whim spren.
It's going to just be whim spren, guys.
Yeah.
Whim spren? No, whim spren.
No, it's supposed to be whim. Well, too bad. It was a typo. We're going with wind. That's it. Forget it.
I love it. It's so funny.
Yeah. Okay. Not you. He says, you're like a spren. You're like a spring.
She's like the wind.
She's like the wind.
It's a Dirty Dancing soundtrack again.
Yeah, you're like a spring.
We've brought up the Dirty Dancing soundtrack several times on this show.
And we will continue to do so.
Yeah, we will not, you know, like, I'm going to continuously have hungry eyes. I'm always
I love that soundtrack.
Me too. It's killer. The best.
It's amazing. Yeah, I don't like the movie, but I love the soundtrack. We could talk about that another time.
That's a different pod.
That's a different pod. Okay. You are as you are. She gave him a flat stare. Mostly, he added, mostly. But it is, Yasna. Compared to other humans, you are practically a stone. Mm-hmm. She sighed at this. I have a desire inside of me interpreting her reaction. So he is saying to her, Ivory Singh, you're like a spren. You are as you are. Yasna, you're like a stone. She sighs, standing up, brushing past him, returning to her writing desk. The herald's ravings glared at her. She settled down, feeling tired. Yasna, Ivory asks, am I in error? I'm not so much a stone as you think, Ivory. Sometimes I wish I were. Would these words trouble you? Why? You have read many troubling things. So what I first thought after reading this is, mm-hmm. I couldn't help but think that just prior to this, she asked him what he thought about Shallan.
Right.
So what I am wondering is how Shallan is affecting Yasna.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think she feels like she's, when we get to it a little bit later here, Yasna feels like she's failing Shallan a little bit. When she's like,
she does.
Do I need to make her, do I need to be even more strict with her as a ward? Or do I go the other route and give her more freedom? She feels like she's failing as a mentor. And I love this whole, you're a stone. I'm not as much of a stone as you think I am. It gets to what Dalinar said before. She seems really emotionless. But then when she lets it out, it means even more because she's been holding it back so much.
Holding it back.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there is stuff brewing inside our girl here that she doesn't really let out a lot of the time.
And part of what I want to be like in terms of that change or those feelings inside of Yasna is affected by her ward.
Right.
I want Shallan to be changing Yasna a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That's my desire.
Yeah.
Okay. Yasna settled back, listening to the span read, scratching paper, writing out the notes. Something stirred deep within her. Glimmers of memory from a dark room. There's our theme for this book, memory. Glimmers of memory from a dark room, screaming her voice ragged. A childhood illness that nobody else seemed to remember for all it had done to her. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
A childhood illness that nobody seemed to remember.
It had taught her that people she loved could still hurt her.
Right. It had taught her that people she loved could still hurt her. Did somebody try to poison her?
Something? We don't know.
I don't know.
I'll be honest with you, Jack. In rereading
it
this time, I don't think I had taken notice of this before. I even wrote big block letters in my notes. Interesting. Where does this come from? I don't know if I ever noticed this before. I think maybe that I kind of hand waved it away as in, like, maybe when she first started getting a spren, that she was being sick by it. She was having visions of Shadesmar or whatever, because her power is instinctively tied to Shadesmar.
Going
and spren,
between worlds, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe maybe that, I thought, well, that was part of it, but it doesn't really read like that here.
Are you holding back?
No, I'm being completely honest right
now. Rhythm of War?
No, I'm being completely honest right now. In reading this part here, I was like, I don't think I'm remembering this either right, or I'm remembering it completely wrong, then maybe I must have read it the first time. Like, this, the glimmers of memory from a dark room, screaming her voice ragged, a childhood illness nobody else seemed to remember. No one else seemed to remember her being sick.
Right, right. Her mother, her father, her brother.
Like, yeah. It's strange, right?
Very strange.
I'm not a scout, but scouts honor. I don't really remember this playing like this.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it'll be really interesting to see what the listeners reach out to me and saying, "Hey, Sean, hey, dummy, here is the thing that you guys were just talking about.
Right.
Don't tell Jack because you should know already because you read the rest of the book and you read the next book that here is the reason for this." Right. It'll be interesting if we get that or if we'll get, actually, you're right. We don't know anything about that yet.
Hmm. Have you ever wondered how it would feel to lose your sanity, Ivory? I have wondered this. How could I not? Considering what the ancient fathers are. You call me logical, Yasna whispered. It's untrue, as I let my passions rule me as much as many. In my times of peace, however, my mind has always been the one thing that I could rely upon. Except once. She shook her head, picking up the paper again. I fear losing that, Ivory. It terrifies me. How would it have felt to be these heralds? To suffer your mind slowly becoming untrustworthy? Mm-hmm. Are they too far gone to know? Or are there lucid moments where they strain and sort through memories, trying frantically to decide which are reliable and which are fabrications?
Mm-hmm.
She shivered. The ancient ones, Ivory said. He didn't often speak of the Spren who had been lost during the recreants. Ivory and his fellows had been mere children. Well, the Spren equivalent at the time, they spent years or centuries with no older Spren to nurture and guide them. The Ink Spren were only now beginning to recover the culture and society that they had lost when men abandoned their vows.
Right.
This is fascinating. It is. I love the Ink Spren. And Ink Spren took it the hardest. And I just love that it's learning, reading, writing things
mm-hmm.
down.
Mm-hmm.
That took a hard hit. If the Ink Spren are gone, then coming back from that is arduous.
It sounds like
terrible.
It was horrible for all groups involved, right?
Yeah. Your ward, Ivory, her Spren is a cryptic. Which is bad? Yasna asks. Ivory nodded.
Mm-hmm.
He preferred simple, straightforward gestures. You never saw Ivory shrug.
Mm-hmm.
There's that mention of the shrugging.
Yeah, like he doesn't, he always knows what he means.
Right.
He never goes, well, I don't know. Which is literally, I actually always go, well, I don't know. Like my shoulders are already always in shrug.
A shrugger.
Yeah.
You're a shrugger.
It's like, you know, oh, Captain, you wanted to know my, Iron Man, you want to know my secret? I'm always angry. That's me. I'm like,
that's
you
want
to know my secret? I'm always shrugging.
I'm always shrugging.
Yeah.
Cryptics are trouble, Ivory insists. They enjoy lies, Yasna, and they feast upon them. Speak one word untrue at a gathering, and seven of them cluster around you. Their humming fills your ears. Have you warred with them? This is something I always forget, is that amongst the Spren themselves, there are conflict.
For sure there are.
There are conflicts.
They have their own,
yeah.
their whole own realm.
I know.
And politics and societies and cultures. And yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's really cool. One does not war with cryptics as one does honor Spren. Oh, but one does go to war with honor Spren?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that, Ivory?
Right.
Why do we go to war against
Spren.
Honor Spren?
Right.
Why do we not want to do the right thing?
It sounds like Ink Spren and Honor Spren have gone to war against
odds?
Each other.
Yeah.
Right?
Doing what's right. And remembering what's come before, I can't, like Ink Spren, I'm just thinking about chronicling things, writing things down, having an account, having an archive, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Why would those two things be in conflict? I don't know. That's interesting. One does not war with the cryptics as one does with Honor Spren. Cryptics have but one city. And do not wish to rule more, only to listen. Perhaps this one is better with the bond. Ivory was the only new generation Ink Spren to form a radiant bond. That makes him unique.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
Some of his fellows would rather have killed Yasna instead of letting him risk what he had done. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Some of his fellows would rather have killed Yasna. his fellow Inkspren?
Yeah.
Because they don't want to have things written down and remembered?
I guess so. Or they don't want to bond with humans again because of maybe what they were just talking about before, the ancient ones.
What?
Well, when you bond with a mortal from the physical realm, you allow yourself to be betrayed as in the recreants, and then...
And then you die.
And then you die, or you become whatever death is for a Spren, right?
For a Spren.
So...
So rather than avoid that altogether,
right?
We'd rather don't bother bonding.
Yeah, just not having anything to do with it, right?
Huh. That's interesting. Hmm. Instead of letting him risk what he had done, the Spren had a noble air about him. He was stiff-backed and commanding. He could change his size at will, but not his shape, except when fully in this realm, manifesting as a shard blade. Mm-hmm. He had taken the name Ivory as a symbol of defiance. He was not what his kin said he was, and would not suffer what fate proclaimed. Oh, I love this.
Yeah.
His name is a statement of defiance.
Yeah, exactly. It's really cool. It's very punk rock of Ivory.
I think it's great. The difference between a higher Spren like him and a common emotion Spren was in their ability to decide how to act, a living contradiction, like human beings.
Just want to point out, I'm going to, at the very end here, at the info dump, we're going to be talking about the term higher Spren. I just want to point it out right now. We'll get back to
it. Sure, yeah. Higher Spren. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he says emotion Spren.
Mm-hmm. Common emotion Shallan Spren, won't. Yeah.
Shallan won't listen to me any longer, Yasna says. She rebels against every little thing that I tell her. These last few months on her own have changed the child. She never obeyed well, Yasna. That is who she is. In the past, at least, she pretended to care about my teaching. But you have said more humans should question their places in life. Did you not say that they too often accept presumed truth as fact? I like this from Ivory.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He's reminding her that, you know, perhaps Shallan is doing things the way she needs to,
right.
And perhaps that's okay.
And you kind of encourage that, too.
And you encouraged it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You're right, of course, Yasna says. Would I rather have... You know what's interesting right there? You're right, of course. Ivory is Yasna's,
like equal?
Better. Or better. She's like he's her better.
There's
like
there's definitely some respect here between the two.
There's right, and that's unusual coming from Yasna,
mm-hmm.
because she's the one on top.
The other
of
thing that
right?
I think like, that we're kind of noticing here in this chapter is it's only been like a year, maybe more, since Kaladin and Syl has had a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, since Shallan and Pattern have had really a relationship. It feels like Yasna and Ivory have been doing this for a very long time. In the prelude to Words of Radiance, the night of Gavilar's killing 7 years ago now is when she first meets Ivory. Remember? She falls into Shadesmar for one of the first times. And
right,
she,
the glass
and then,
beads.
And then she sees this inky, you know, like man walk towards her. And that's Ivory. So she's been with Ivory for 7 years now, learning, talking, you know, like he's grown. I mean, we know this Spren grow more the more they interact with the mortals. So he's way farther along in his development.
Right.
And they are in their relationship than some of these other Radiants with their Spren, right?
I often just think that the Spren are just like a... They're separate from who they bond with, but they're also... They almost feel like manifestations or extrapolations of the person that they're bonded to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, there's an interdependentness that happens there.
Yeah.
Yeah, they need each other and they become like each other.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But I think it's fascinating that she's like, you're right, of course. I just think that acknowledgement from Yasna, you're right.
And how easy it came.
Whoa. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. You're right, of course. Wouldn't I rather have her straining against her boundaries as opposed to happily living with them? Whether she obeys me or not is of little import. but I do worry about her ability to command her situation, rather than letting her impulses command her.
I agree, Yasna. I agree with that statement.
Me too. How do you change this, if it is? He asks. An excellent question. Yasna searched through the papers on her small table. She'd been collecting reports from her informants in the war camps about Shallan. Mm-hmm. She'd truly done well in Yasna's absence. Perhaps what the child needed was not more structure, but more challenges. Mm-hmm. Notice how she refers to her as the child.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of Yasna's, I don't know.
Her stuff.
When will Shallan grow up in Yasna's eyes? Yeah. When will that happen? All 10 orders are again, Ivory said from behind her. For years, it had been only two of them. Yasna and Ivory. Ivory had been dodgy about giving odds on whether the other sapient Spren would refound their orders or not.
Now she's referring to these higher Spren as sapient Spren. So another different
sapient
term.
Sapient Sprens. Yeah. However, he'd always said that he was certain that the Honor Spren, and therefore the Windrunners, would never return.
Mm-hmm.
Their attempts to rule Shadesmar had apparently not endeared them to the other races.
Hmm.
Windrunners attempting to control and rule Shadesmar?
No. Not Windrunners. Honor Spren.
Or Honor Spren, sorry. Honor Spren. Right.
Honor Spren sound like the Alethi of Shadesmar.
Right.
Pretty neat.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, also concerning.
Yeah, a little.
Yeah, it's concerning. 10 orders, Yasna says, all ended in death. Yes, but all but one, Ivory agreed. They lived in death instead.
Talking about the...
I like that.
Talking about the Skybreakers and their Spren, known as High Spren, which is where the trickery here happens in the language, and we'll talk about that in a second.
Okay. She turned around, and he met her eyes with his own. No pupils, just oil, shimmering above something deep, deeply black.
Mm-hmm.
We must tell the others what we learn from Wit, Ivory. Eventually, this secret must be known. Yasna, no, it would be the end. Another recreance. The truth has not destroyed me. But you are special. No knowledge is that can destroy you. But the others? She held his eyes, then gathered the sheets stacked behind her. We shall see, she said, and then carried them to the table to bind them into a book.
Couple of things here. Yep. Ends in a big bang.
It does.
We must tell the others
what
we learned from Wit.
Right.
No, Yasna, it would be the end, another recreance.
Another recreance. Another breaking of oaths, right?
People knew what Yasna knows, the secret, they would abandon their oaths again. Like the recreants.
Right.
What secret is this?
I have no idea. I don't know what this is. It's awful.
Yeah.
I wanted it right now, of course. So
why don't you just talk about the secret, guys? Just talk about it.
Yeah. Finishing that chapter is both delightful and also because I want to keep reading. And of course we have to.
Of course.
We're doing this episodically.
Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that I thought was neat that I wanted to bring up to you was she's binding things into a book.
I know. And of course, I'm wondering, is that Oathbringer?
Right. Because we had talked about how the author could have been Dalinar. Oh, Jack, just attention, everyone.
Go.
Jack just showed me his arm. You know what that means? The goosebumps.
I wanted Yasna or someone like her to be putting together Oathbringer.
Right.
Since the beginning of this thing. Mm-hmm. So if that's what's being done, if there's a... If she is contributing to keeping the information around, producing a manual for Radiance, something along those lines, if that's what Oathbringer is.
It's kind of what the book Words of Radiance is, right?
Words of Radiance is that. Yeah, true enough.
But regardless, this is a really nice little thing that Sanderson does here. Either it's giving us a hint that the book Oathbringer could be being written still could be being written by Yasna, or it's another misdirect, right? So
yeah,
either way, it accomplishes both things for us as
right.
these in-depth mm-hmm. readers of this book right now, where mm-hmm. we're really paying attention to this stuff, right? So it's really awesome. What's your highlight if you had to pick one?
Oh gosh, for this, oh, there's so many morsels. Yasna, I like my, I guess my highlight is my desire to have Shallan affect the stone
right.
of Yasna.
Be the water that like kind of.
Yeah. Just affects her
over time.
And that it's not that Shallan needs the control that Yasna appears to still think she needs. Mm-hmm. But almost it's that, you know, it's that control that's part of the problem. Shallan is something that you need to maybe trust in, maybe let go,
mm-hmm.
allow her to grow up, allow her to make mistakes.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the best approach for Shallan, is not to try to contain her.
This is going to be a very wild metaphor, but in what? Holding a golf club, they always say that it's like holding a baby bird or holding a bird. You want to hold it tightly enough that it doesn't fly away, but not too tight that you crush it.
Right.
And when you learn right. to play golf, you hold the clubs
sure.
tight enough that it doesn't fly out of your hand, but not too tight that you're like, you know, straining your hands and your arms on holding the club. Right.
Right.
I love this too.
So,
from Yasna, and from I love this idea that Shallan is having an effect on Yasna. I think it's great. I love your read of it.
Yeah. So that's. I mean, Ivory though, I have to say, is a delight.
This is my highlight of the chapter. Is
Ivory? Yeah.
Is getting to know Ivory. Getting to know
100%.
Ivory. Getting to know all about Ivory. I love it. It's great.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
No. I love Ivory. I think it's. It's, I'm very curious about, I'm really curious about these wars between Spren.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole history of another realm between, here, right?
Yeah. And I'm so curious about the secret of wit. Are you kidding me? It's been so long since we've had a dash of wit.
I know. You need a dash of wit.
I want some wit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really want some wit.
Well, here, I'll give you some wit.
Okay.
A couple of things I want to talk here about before sure. we hit the actual Buzzkill Joe info dump. In Talonel Ellen's, this is just a little side thing that I forgot to mention earlier. In his little speech here, he says something, and then immediately I couldn't get a song out of my head for the rest of the day after reading this part. He says, we should have time. Ishar keeps talking about a way of keeping information from being lost following the desolations. And you have mm-hmm. discovered something unexpected. Something unexpected. Something sharp. Something new. It's not symmetrical or perfect, but it's beautiful. And it's mine. What else could I do? Freaking Encanto was in my head. As soon as I read that, I couldn't get Encanto out of my head. So another Daddy Corner segment here where I see see everything through the lens of a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old girl. So I just thought that was pretty
great. It's a great perspective to have. Actually.
It is great. And I love, truthfully, I love all those songs from Encanto. So
of course.
I'm not complaining. The other thing I wanted to talk about was a few weeks ago, we talked about how you and I had been using the term High Spren wrong.
Okay, yes. Mm-hmm.
We had been using High Spren as a way to describe that tier of Spren who can bond radiance, as opposed to the common emotion Spren like anger Spren or fear Spren or pain Spren, that kind of stuff. And we had kind of made this distinction between sentient Spren and these lower base Spren or whatever. Mm-hmm. I had gotten some messages online from listeners saying, you shouldn't use High Spren that way because Skybreaker's Spren are actually called High Spren. So it's a little confusing right. when you use that term. I just thought that maybe it might be appropriate for all those people who messaged me. Maybe they should be messaging Yasna, because Yasna in this chapter uses higher spren as a term to describe them as well. And so I feel a little bit of vindication here, just a tiny little bit.
Unless, of course, there's a distinction different. Between high and higher.
Yeah, right. Get me higher. So, yeah, I just thought that was really fun. As soon as I read it, I was like, oh, really? I guess I wasn't so far off. If I'm in the same category as Yasna, then...
I know, but it's kind of like saying it's like the difference between full house and a fuller house. There is a difference.
Very different.
Between,
yeah.
between sucks, high spread and higher spread.
One sucks and one really sucks.
Are you kidding? Come
so
on.
From now on, we will use Yasna's second term, which is in this chapter, which is sapient. So we can use sapient
right.
talking about Ivory and Pattern and Sill and all the other ones, and then we will just use like maybe base spren or common emotion spren as the other term. So I just wanted to clean that a little up. I thought it was kind of funny that Yasna also uses the word high, even though it's higher, in the description, and maybe that's where I got the term of using high.
Listen, so. You stop rubbing it in.
I am. I'm just this is who I am. I am vindictive. I'm a vindictive little bitch. All right, so now let's just quickly move on to our info dump. Thank you again to Buzzkill Joe for doing all the work on our info dump. We are going to start with Chapter 46, When Dreams Die. Ristina is a short Alethi scribe with a sense of humor. You know that in the past in these books, when a character is named, they tend to come back again. So let's can't wait for this
Ristina.
Fun scribe to come back. A bunch of places are named here. Tubela, they talk about Yakoved and Azir again. He's talking about how the Parshendi thought that they were nomads that they would travel amongst these places. It sounds like Scar is not that much younger than Teft. He mentions that in the chapter, which is really interesting because Teft in our minds is kind of like an old dude, and so Scar's not actually that much younger than him. So maybe that's why he's took so easily to stuff. He's got a lot of experience. Captain Collot is another Bridge 4 recruit, and he was a light-eyed captain, which is kind of cool. He was one of the archer captains who helped Bridge 4 scout Urithiru. Remember at the beginning of the book, we were like, oh, this is really cool. There's this group of soldiers who want to be involved with Bridge 4. You know, they see them and respect them. And so this is one of those guys. So I like that. That's really, really neat. Cohen is another guy who got recruited after the tower. Even though he never ran a bridge, he is now able to draw Stormlight, which is really, really interesting. He's from the Cobalt Guard formerly. There's a little part here where we get brief histories on Drehi. Drehi got into the bridge crews because he struck an officer. Eth was because he was trying to desert. Hobber had gotten into a drunken brawl
bar
at
fight.
A bar. Yeah. So really interesting we get these little parts here. They also talk about these quarter lashings and how they don't really match up with weight differentials. I don't know if that really... We don't really have more information on the specific science and math of it all, but it's interesting to think that they are trying to figure it out, and they are even themselves a little confused about it. So here he has written a Stormlight endurance buff. A fit squire using Stormlight is nearly twice as fast as a fit human not using Stormlight when tested running over a mile of terrain. So it's a little bit less than that because Scar did it in under 10 minutes, and Drehi did it in 6. So there's, you know, but Scar is probably like peak Bridgman. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
If we had taken any other Bridgman who didn't have Stormlight and tested them, they might be a little bit slower than Scar. I think that just shows us Scar's abilities. We talked a little bit about how cool it was that the plateaus shifted between oath gates. It wasn't just one teleporting from here to there. Whatever is on both plateaus shift over, which is really, really cool. We got a horn eater tea here, which is awesome. Another little cultural food from the horn eater peaks. And Aladar's personal guard is known as the Black Caps, which is awesome. And then chapter 47, Lost So Much. Obviously, we talked about the Yasna's notes getting backed up, which is really cool. Ivory is a Inkspren. I'm not sure if we actually got that term before this chapter. He talks about cryptics, that they're trouble, and that they only have one city and they do not wish to rule more. Only listen.
That's
so
right.
They're content being where they are, which is really interesting.
Right.
And that's it. That's the end of the info dump. Thank you very much to Buzzkill Joe for doing that for us. We really appreciate every time you write out some notes for us. It makes my job much easier, and we just, you know, he's such a good dude. We just really enjoy him being involved in the whole process. So, so if you are out there and you want to be part of the Discord group or part of the Patreon team, go to patreon.com/heroesof. You can join up on any one of the tiers. There are all kinds of goodies on there you can read. I'm going to start writing some more posts too. I stopped doing that, writing those little rants that I used to do. I'll start doing that again. If you want to have the Discord link and you want to be part of the community, you can go to patreon.com/heroesof and be part of it. If you want to reach out to us, you can do so at heroesofacathra@gmail.com. On Twitter, the bane of my existence, Twitter, at Heroes of One. You can meet up with us on Instagram and check out all our cool posts, like the one that I posted here for Jack with by a little gray dragon, on our Instagram feed at The Storm Pod. And make sure to join up on the subreddit, The Storm Pod, or the Facebook group, The Storm Pod. So, yeah. So next episode, we are doing two chapters, 48.
Two.
And 49, very interesting chapters. They're going to be really fun. It's about the same length, I think. One short one, one long one.
Is it?
Yeah,
okay.
One short one, one medium one, I would say. But Jack already read the chapter of...
title.
The title chapter of 48, Rhythm of War.
Work.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
The Rhythm of Work.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. A little foreshadowing here to the next book.
Yeah.
Anyways, thank you very much for everyone for listening to the show. We love you very much. Until next time.
Take care, everybody.
The Storm Pod is brought to you by Heroes of. Music and theme song by Jack Forrest Productions. Additional music by Jason Moray. Produced by our wonderful Patreon team and the Heroes of Acathra.